Okay, good morning, everyone. Let's go ahead and we'll begin this session. The Oral Health section would like to welcome you to this session. It's number 4135, and the title is Improved Oral Health for the Older Adult, Recommendations and Approaches for National and State Action. We invite you to become more involved in the Oral Health section by attending our business meeting tonight, which will be Tuesday evening at 7 o'clock. The program says 6:30, but we've moved it back to 7 o'clock in the Convention Center in room 148. And conveniently, that is just down the hall from the APHA Awards Ceremony and Reception, which is in the Convention Center 146 AB, that starts at 6 o'clock. So after tonight's session's end, you could wander over to the Convention Center, stop by that reception, and then come to our business meeting. Okay, you can also stop by our booth in the Exhibit Hall, that's number 5078, just over from the APHA main exhibit area, or by emailing one of our section leaders as found on our Oral Health section website, which you can get to from the APHA website. Okay, this is an invited session organized by the Oral Health section and co-planned with the Aging and Public Health section and the Association of State and Territorial Dental Directors Healthy Aging Committee. So it was a real collaborative effort in putting together today's presentations. And I'd like to thank them for their participation. For those of you seeking continuing education credit, APHA values the ability to provide CE credit to physicians, nurses, health educators, and those certified in public health. The Oral Health section also values the ability to provide ADA CERP, which is American Dental Association Continuing Education Recognition, CE credits. We have a special form for that, which you can get from our co-moderator, Oscar Arvalo. And after you fill that out, you can turn it back into him at the end of the session. Okay, I'd like you to be sure your cell phones and electronic devices are in silent mode or turned off. We are going to hold questions until the end after we have all four speakers give their presentations. I'm going to go ahead and introduce all four of them. Nadira Perat will start off. She's a professor of health services at UCLA School of Public Health and director of research at the UCLA Center for Health Policy Research. Dr. Perat's research focuses on examining the underlying reasons for disparities in access to care of underserved populations. Areas of concentration include access to oral health care, disparities in outcomes of disease management and medical home assignment within the safety net system, and access to care of undocumented and other immigrants. Her presentation is titled, Public Health in an Aging Society, How Can We Improve the Oral Health of Older Adults? Next will be Barbara Smith. Barbara is the manager for geriatrics and special needs populations at the American Dental Association. She provides staff management to the ADA's National Elder Care Advisory Committee. Dr. Smith has held academic positions in schools of dentistry at University of Michigan, Minnesota, and Indiana, and has been involved in geriatric dental education and clinical administration for 30 years. She was instrumental in building the first university-based MS program in geriatrics for dentists in the U.S., the Oral Health Services for Older Adults program at the University of Minnesota. She has a PhD in epidemiology and other degrees in public health. Her presentation is titled Coalition Development to Address the Oral Health of Vulnerable Older Adults and Persons with Disabilities. Next will be Linda Ferraro. Linda is a dental hygienist who's practiced both in private practice setting and in community health center settings. She was director of the Dental Center of Stamford, a nonprofit dental clinic serving the underserved in Lower Fairfield County, Connecticut. She's currently the program coordinator for the Office of Oral Health at the Connecticut State Department of Public Health. And in addition to her duties there, she's the chairperson for the Connecticut Task Force on Oral Health for Older Adults, the State Dental Sealant Coordinator, and is chair of the Association of State and Territorial Dental Directors Healthy Aging Committee. Her presentation is entitled State Efforts to Assess the Oral Health of Older Adults. Our last speaker will be Robin Stone. Robin is a noted researcher and internationally recognized authority on long-term aging and aging policy. She's the executive director of the Center for Applied Research, formerly the Institute for the Future of Aging Services. This is at Leading Age, which was formerly the American Association of Homes and Services for the Aging here in Washington, D.C. She started the Institute for the Future of Aging Services about 10 years ago and has developed a number of national programs. She has held senior positions for both the U.S. government and the private sector. During the Clinton administration, she was the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Disability, Aging, and Long-Term Care Policy, and also served as an Assistant Secretary for Aging. So she brings a lot of knowledge and a lot of expertise in policy and policy development. Okay. Robin's presentation is entitled Policy Approaches for Increasing Access to Oral Health Prevention and Care for the Older Adult. Okay, so now I'd like to turn the podium over to Nadira Purat.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome. So my goal today is to sort of present the case why we need to think about and prepare for for focusing on oral health among the aging population. Why we are here today. So do this successfully. Okay. So the. One of the main issues in oral health, at least in my opinion, is that oral health is often not considered, or from a lot of different perspectives, it's not considered as part of the overall health. We don't have the whole person orientation when it comes to oral health. We think about it in terms of a contained sort of, you know, issues that are contained to the oral cavity, and that's it. But the link between health and overall health and oral health just has to be better established. So I actually wanted to thank, I'm so grateful to people who, to the latest issue of American Journal of Public Health for putting out this issue exactly as I was trying to prepare for this presentation. They did my job so much easier by conceptualizing how does oral health, what is the role of oral health in the overall health of the person? And it's really nicely organized in here where you're looking at the individual, you know, the impact of age on chronic illness. I think that's something that people who are involved with aging, you know, clearly understand as you get older, the prevalence of chronic conditions increase. Chronic conditions are linked to specific oral health conditions. But what is not really talked about as much or is not enough evidence yet is the link between good oral health or dental health and chronic conditions. So that feedback mechanism is a two-way relationship, and that needs to be better established with research. Talking about oral health and how does it play into the role, how does it play into good nutrition in terms of ability to chew, range of foods, range of healthy food choices. How does nutrition link into other aspects of health, such as physical health, that then sort of links back into the overall health and well-being? How does oral health play a role in social support? What is the role of social support in oral health promotion, et cetera, et cetera? This is the latest issue. Well, it's the one before the latest issue of American Journal of Public Health. I see a lot of people have already seen that. Hopefully you've looked at the article and sort of understand the relationships that this particular diagram is trying to show. So just wanted to, that was the goal, was to illustrate the role of oral health in overall well-being. And so what we need to, you know, so links to chronic diseases somewhat established, link to overall quality of life and well-being established, but perhaps needs to be better established, links to nutrition and diet and social isolation. And the fact, what we need to make the case is to show that oral health is part of overall physical, mental, and emotional social health, well-being. So another, I think, major issue that we have when it comes to oral health, the systems that deliver oral health care and systems that deliver the medical care is pretty well separated when you think about it. With the dental care delivery system is dominated by solo dentists in private practice. So solo dentists in private practice means they are working on their own most often, independently, not part of a what we like to talk about these days, the medical home and sort of integration of all different providers so that you could provide whole person orientation. That link is not there at the moment, partly because of the way the system is established. Just wanted to show a little bit of information about the characteristics of dentists in private practice currently. You could see the high prevalence of dentists in solo practice, low rate of specialization. Actually, this data from the ADA, I think, might be a little bit overshadowed by oversampling of specialist dentists, but in California, at least, we know the rate of specialization is really low. So most dentists are in general practice, which is a good thing. A lot of dentists don't have hygienists, and you understand the relationship of having hygienists to being able to provide more services, perhaps, or more preventive care. And then the amount of time that dentists spend in actual patient treatment, which means the amount of time spent in administrative type of activities, actually quite low. It's a direct contrast to what's going on in medical care. If you have looked at that data and are familiar with that data, it's a very different way of providing care. So what does it mean that dentists are in solo practice? It's sort of a practice of dentistry at the moment is where medicine was perhaps many years ago. In medicine, you have a lot more of group practice and the role of insurance is quite different. You get lots of scrutiny over what is done in the everyday practice, how practice is organized and how care is delivered, and the practice of dentistry is quite different. So those factors are important to consider. I have one more slide here that I wanted to... Okay. No, that's fine. I think I'm good. Thank you. So the fact that dentists are in solo practice means they're not in group practice, and there are fewer opportunities for integration of dentists into delivery of care when we're talking about the whole person orientation. Another issue that's different, in dentistry, there's a difference. You have multiple treatments per dental problem. So what does that mean? There's not a single right way of doing things. It's not like practice of medicine when you have evidence-based practice for, you know, patient with a specific problem. Here are the different things that need to be done. A lot more research into what is the right approach to delivery of care. In dental practice, we have a different situation. So that's, again, another factor that needs to be taken into consideration. High rate of self-paying patients, what does that mean? That means less insurance scrutiny, less more fee-for-service type of reimbursement for care. And that has different types of incentives for delivery of care. Fee-for-service, essentially, the more you do, the more you get paid, as opposed to capitation, which has different incentives for delivery of care. So those are, again, factors we need to think about. And dentistry has actually a very active and successful professional advocacy organization, which I think is an asset in terms of changing or delivery of care to the older population, where you can engage, you know, organizations that can be engaged in this discussion of how do you deliver care to the older population. Better. Okay. All right. So my husband and I had an argument about this. So is this, I called it a paradigm shift, and he said, well, that is not a paradigm shift when we're talking about what I'd like to say. So this is really a question. Is this a major change? Are we observing a major change in the way dental care is being delivered? The practice of dentistry, is this a real shift in perspectives and the way we're thinking about delivery of care? And these are the reasons I was thinking about maybe we are looking at a fundamental change, and we need to think about a fundamental change in the way healthcare is delivered when we have a major shift in the population profile. So we have many, many individuals that are going to be reaching the ages of 65 to 84 and 85 and plus. What is the implication of aging of the population? The older population, particularly, there's a high rate of disability. So disability has certain implications for access to services. Not only the level of need is different, but the needs of disabled population are also different. So keep that in mind. We'll talk about that again. Don't want to go down. It's frozen. Yeah, thank you. another factor, the older population, unlike previous generations, have a different profile when it comes to their oral health status. So we have a lot more older population are far more likely to have teeth. This is just the number of teeth that among the older population from the latest NHANES survey, people 65 and older. So on average, the number of missing teeth is about 8.3 by age group, as you can see, right? And then, overall, the number of teeth. So of an individual that has a maximum number of 32 teeth, you're talking about population, the older population, with significant number of teeth, with significant level of decayed or filled, et cetera, et cetera. So what does this mean in terms of a population, an aging population that has significant dental care needs? Again, keep that in mind. and, of course, complex health problems, you know, high prevalence of diabetes, heart disease, types of problems that have links to oral health, bidirectional, possibly. Okay. And another thing that I wanted to show you, this is data from a survey that we collected in 2003 in California, which I was showing a little bit of that earlier, too. I was looking at the dentist reporting of the percentage of the population that they see that's older, 65 and older. And we, over here, so we're asking the percentage that are over 65, only about 5% said that 24% of their patients, 24% said that the percentage of the population over 65 is about 5% or less, so a very small percentage. About 71% were under 50, and then very small number had high number of elderly in their practice. The average was 18. And then I just contrasted What is there any difference in terms of what they are doing in their everyday practice? And this is the average per week numbers we were asking the dentists. So you can see that some of these are not unexpected. You know, dentists that have a lot of older population in their practice tend to do more implants, aesthetic, periodontic, endodontic, prosthodontic. Not unexpected. But then when you look down here, this was particularly interesting to me, that the percentage that said they're doing preventive care is lower. Now, this was dentists reported, how much of their own time they're spending in preventive care. So you might ask, well, they could have hygienists that's doing the preventive care. But then I looked at dentists that did report they had a hygienist. Remember, about 50% in California said they didn't employ a hygienist. When you look at the percent that said they're employing hygienists, again, the percentage that they spent in preventive care themselves was lower, and the number of visits for their hygienist was also lower than the ones that were spending, that had a lower percentage of older population in their practice. Okay? So an area that needs to be thought about, this is, you know, provision of preventive services to the older population. We were looking at the population that still have a lot of teeth. That's something that I think needs to be really well established and need to inform everyone about it. So I'm going to go back to here, perhaps not. There we go. Okay. Scope of dental practice. There's a lot of discussion about the perhaps dentists can be more involved in diagnosis and not delivery of services, but in terms of diagnosis, particularly when it comes to chronic conditions. Why don't dentists get more involved? I mean, these are significant questions when it comes to scope of practice. You know, you were talking about medical profession, dental profession need to come to an agreement about what's appropriate. Can you actually figure out a way of improving the diagnosis and screening within the dental practice as opposed to the common way that it's done, which is in the medical practice? Do we want to sort of build on those types of opportunities when it comes to screening and diagnosis? The issue of mid-level providers. For those of you who are following, there's a lot of debate and discussion about sort of preparing or increasing the workforce that provides dental care by expanding the scope of function for hygienists, by expanding the scope of function for dental assistants. You know, we have the various proposals that are, various training programs that are already out there. The Healthcare Reform Act also has some provisions in there for demonstration projects of trying to improve the mid-level provider supply. And then the issue of evidence-based dentistry that we talked about, you know, that's something that's not really done. There's not enough of those types of activities sort of to improve what are the appropriate ways of taking care of specific problems. So those are the reasons I think that we're looking at a major shift in delivery of dental care. Whether it's a paradigm shift or not, we can worry about that later. Okay, dental insurance. So that's an important issue. I know I don't have a lot of time, so I need to speak a little faster. Anybody actually doesn't sort of believe in the link between importance of dental insurance and access to care? Okay, good. I don't have to make that case. But the reality is that a lot of older population don't have dental insurance. I think that's something that needs to be well established, that so many people don't have dental insurance. And when you don't have dental insurance, the chances that you're actually going to use services is going to be lower. Now, what we haven't really done is focus. Unfortunately, the Healthcare Reform Act doesn't spend any time talking about the importance of having dental benefits as part of the overall package of benefits that is being proposed for the for everyone. So we have, this is the toughest challenges. Without dental insurance, you have to pay out of pocket. And paying out of pocket means that it's going to depend on the affordability. And since there are so many different options in treatment, you know, you go with a problem in your tooth, there are options of pulling the tooth or doing a root canal and crown, et cetera. What are you going to do when you don't have insurance and you don't have money? Okay. All right. So, and just a quick look at the coverage of dental insurance data from the California Health Interview Survey that was readily available. So I used it. And you can see that the percentage of the older population that are uninsured is actually higher than the general population. So this is for dental insurance. And then when they do have dental insurance, what is this? When they don't have dental insurance, what kind of coverage they have, you can see the Medicare population actually. The ones that have Medicare coverage actually have, a lot of them don't have dental insurance. Issues of getting the patient to the dentist, especially when you're talking about the disabled population, people that have difficulty getting transportation or difficulty getting to the dentist. Once you get to the dentist, it doesn't end there. If you are disabled and the dental practice is not able to, you know, if you're in a wheelchair, how are you going to get that patient into the chair? And so what does that mean? Does it mean that we do have to have certain capacity for taking care of those type of patients? And then you have all those patients that can't even get to a dentist. So we're talking about, we need to talk about a lot of different creative ways of bringing that dental care to the patient. So we're talking about, like, if we, for example, expanded scope dental hygienist could practice or provide care to nursing home or homebound populations. So we need to talk about the creative ways of achieving these kinds of providing more access to the older population that are more likely to have these kind of conditions. And then I'm going to then finish up with some suggestions. What do we need to do to prepare for the aging population and provide better oral health care and access? And maybe a little bit more on efficacy and effectiveness of oral health intervention. We really need to build the case. Why does oral health matter? And we need to sort of, you know, numbers actually do very well when it comes in policy making. They come in very handy. You need to show numbers. You need to show cost effectiveness. You need to show effectiveness. That's the language that I think a lot of policymakers can actually latch onto and use and is effective. Establishing the links, better establishing the links between oral disease and oral health care, sorry, overall disease, chronic disease and oral health care. Education, continuing educational efforts in understanding the importance of preventive care in the older population. I think we need to continue working on that and establishing that better. Dealing with access issues for disabled, institutionalized, homebound elderly, that's something that needs to continue. Already there are some efforts in that area. Continuing to prepare students that are in dental education and continuing to build content of geriatric education is going to be also very important. And then perhaps figuring out ways of integrating medical and dental care delivery system. And finally, dental insurance. You know, you need to bring all of these together to be really effective at providing oral health to the older population. I'm going to close up with that. Thank you.